blum, 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 bloop.
One more time.
Da 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 da.
Can you do it more in a bossa nova?
Da 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 da.
Good, very good, Joel.
Was that pretty good?
Yeah.
Was that bossa nova e? What's that? Would be a salsa.
Actually, that was kind of salsa-y.
What is the difference between bossa nova and salsa?
I think tomatoes.
Yeah, one tastes better.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Friends Are Forum and Animation Forum.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Yeah, I feel welcomed.
That was for you, Joel.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. We're the official unofficial podcast of...
Animation World Network.
AWN.com.
Alan?
Yeah.
What I hear in my ears right now
uh-huh.
is the cutest darn kitty cat sound.
I got a kitty cat.
Coming from the other room.
I know. She is very cute. She's a very nice kitty.
She might even interact with us if we're lucky.
Maybe.
From
maybe.
Time to time.
Yeah. On the show.
She has a distinctive meow.
Yeah. She's very talkative. She's a little needy, but that's okay. She's just a little kitty. So.
So. Today's show.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, little confusing.
A little confusing.
Alan,
mm-hmm.
in this episode, remember, we're going to take you back to our time in Los Angeles.
Right, right, right.
Alan is on Skype
That's
for
right.
this episode.
That's right.
I was going to explain it. I want it to be a mystery.
Yeah.
Just going.
Okay.
Alan will just be on Skype.
I'm on Skype.
Our guest for this episode, Scott Aukerman. Computer, summon us backwards through time and space. Here we go.
All right.
Here we go now. Let's bring him in, computer. Summon Scott Aukerman. Here he comes. Alan, are you clapping through Skype?
Oh, yeah.
Are you clapping for yourself?
I would love to. I thought it was impolite.
You but, don't?
I can.
Do you know how to clap?
I did it once as a child.
Yeah.
And it was very eventful. It was a very eventful day for me.
Did you say yay as you did it?
No, I actually, I have very sensitive skin, so I said ow, 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 because I have this rare disease where my fingers are the only part of my body that feels anything.
Oh.
And so I'd never felt any kind of sensation before other than the few times that I touched hot stoves.
Mm.
So the minute I felt the sensation of my fingers pressing together, I immediately said, ow, like it was a hot stove, because I just didn't know how to feel. Of course, since then, I realized that I don't have to say ow every time I touch something. I just choose to.
I had a similar problem when I was little, but that's because my parents, they just, you know, it was a different time, safe time. They let me go outside in the sun as an infant, crawl around. If the pavement didn't burn my skin, it was the sun when I'd kind of lay down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they thought an easy way to salve it
mm-hmm.
was with...
Not solve it, but
not
salve it.
Salve. With mayo.
Ew.
Which, in the sun, just starts to create a whole other problem of bacteria.
This is going to sound weird, but I would love to lick that mayo off your
really?
Body. Yeah.
That does not sound strange.
I would just love to take a
yeah.
bite into you.
Yeah.
Just slathered in mayo. Take a bite out of your thigh,
yeah.
you know?
They are meaty.
Dark meat. Oh,
they're meaty.
Yeah. They're meeting and you're very pale.
Yep.
As am I.
Yes.
And Alan, I can't tell how pale you are.
Alan's
but...
pretty pale. What do you think, Alan?
Right now, I'm just a disembodied head, so it's all right.
Okay.
You also look you look like a redhead. You look like a ginge.
I've got a little ginge in me.
Yeah, I'm definitely of the ginge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A couple of ginges. Is that why you're friends?
The only reason.
Yes.
The only reason.
I only talk to redheaded people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I had red hair as a baby, so let's continue on.
Wow.
Perfect.
A lot of people did.
You're also drinking, Alan. You're drinking from on the computer. You're drinking from Skype. Like, how come you get a glass of wine and all I got was this Jack in the Box?
That you brought.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And you told me to bring.
I didn't even... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were like, go to Jack in the Box
yeah.
before the interview, pick up an iced tea and drink it. So I'm just following instructions, but here we go.
And I also said bring me an apple pie.
I think that the main difference is I'm an alcoholic.
Mm. Ah, got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's like
I have
air
a problem,
for you.
But that's all right.
All right.
That's
well...
Like, that's like Air Jordans for me.
Yeah.
I'm a shoeaholic.
Do you remember the Reebok pump?
Remember it. I'm wearing them
yeah.
right now.
Yeah.
On my penis.
Right. Of course.
The penis equivalent
That's
of
what
the
I
Reebok
meant.
Pump.
The Reebok cock
yeah.
pump.
Yeah.
Why?
Can you say cock on this show? Do animators
no.
enjoy hearing that kind of cursing?
They hate all curse words. innuendo.
Computers across America have suddenly turned off. They're like, I'm not even going to stop this program. I'm going to turn my computer completely off.
Or even just recycle it altogether.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, right in burn, the right you recycling. Burn your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there's something you don't know about animators is they are the most surly, disgusting, drunk, drug addict.
You're just talking about yourself right now.
I'm just talking about myself.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
There. I mean, Alan does exude the whole rock and roll animator lifestyle.
You really do look so rock and roll for an animator.
I do bill myself as the rock and roll animator.
You're at about a one on normal standards, but in animator standards, you are just like, you're Vince Neil.
Oh, I don't know about that. Well, yeah, I'm just about as bloated as he is at this point.
Mm-hmm. You can't tell it from his head, but this goes down, he's bloated.
Oh, yeah. You're like a teepee, or you just like widen out the further down you get?
Infinitely. Yes. Infinitely. It's amazing.
When I say teepee, I don't mean toilet paper.
No, I mean
you're like a big fat roll of Charmin.
The Native American dwelling? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm more of a wigwam myself. Now, Scott, for those who don't know you.
Yes, who am I? What am I doing here? Why are you talking to me? Why do I even try to be funny before people even know who I am?
Were you being funny?
Oh.
Anyway.
Is that your style of hosting, Joel?
Scott Aukerman.
Hello. Hello. Who am I?
You have done many things.
Uh-oh.
You have many naughty things. The Comedy Death Ray podcast.
Comedy Death Ray Radio.
CDRR?
CDRR podcast, which you can get on iTunes, unlike this program.
Right.
And we're at earwolf.com or comedydeathray.com, and a very popular podcast.
Yes. Also, you are a co-creator of the Comedy Death Ray show.
Which is a live show.
Live show at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
In Los Angeles, yes. Which is a little tiny theater for people who don't know the comedy world. It's a tiny theater in L.A. The New York one is where a lot of the SNL people go up. The phone's off. And the L.A. theater, they're owned by Amy Poehler of Saturday Night Live and Parks and Rec, and Matt Besser and Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts, the Upright Citizens Brigade. And we do a show on Tuesday nights. We've been doing it for 8 years, which is a stand-up slash comedy character show.
I went to that.
Did you?
On Tuesday.
Oh, how did you like it?
I rather enjoyed myself.
And
it was good.
Who'd you see at a show? You know, I hate to brag, but who was there?
Brendan Small.
Yeah.
Oh, I know Brendan.
Alan worked with him.
From Metal Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked with him on Home Movies.
Oh, great. Great show.
Yeah. In addition to all of that, you direct the Between Two Ferns.
Some of them. I've made them all, but I direct some of them.
Okay. And by made, what does that mean?
You know, I'm like the executive producer of them.
Okay.
Not to get too technical, in showbiz.
Yeah.
But you've heard of producers. There's several levels of producers. Executive is the highest you can go.
Is that that musical?
Yeah, the producers. Yeah. Yeah. No,
you're in that?
I'm in the producers.
Okay.
And we based... phone's off.
That's my vibrator.
Okay. And we basically what happened was I was playing a Balyak in the producers. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would make a great web series. And so, but I thought, you know, not starring me, but let me get someone just as fat.
Right.
So I talked to Zach Galifianakis, and he said, well, I'm fat. So, you know, we basically turned it into a show.
Yeah. And how's it doing?
Doing pretty well. One just came out the other day recently. I don't know when this will air, but Steve.
This is live.
Oh,
yeah.
This is a horrible experience for most people, watching you fuck around trying to hook up a microphone for half an hour.
Yeah, it's been live since 2.
We just put out a Steve Carell episode, did really well.
That's the one I saw.
Oh, cool. Oh, you've only seen one?
Well, when I was at the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We showed it at the show. Yeah.
Silence throughout the whole audience. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
You see your style, you know? You're sarcastic and you're caustic and, like, you're bad cop and you're TP cop and
he's just a
drinking
drunk,
cop.
Just a drunk.
I'm getting it. I'm getting it now. We have never met before. Is that correct, sir?
I don't know.
Is this your card?
okay, so we have that Between Two Ferns.
Yeah.
You're an Emmy award winning writer.
That is incorrect. But I was nominated. Yes.
Okay. Oh, nominated.
Yeah,
did still pretty good.
It's not bad. Anyone can get nominated for an Emmy.
For Mr. Show.
Mr. Show, yeah, with Bob and David, HBO cult classic show.
Yeah. Also, and above all, you also were
above
the
all.
Third. What well, below all, you were the third billed additional dialogue writer on Shark Tale,
which is why you wanted me on this program.
Yes. Now we're getting to the meat of it.
Here we go.
This is the core.
That's what I'm most proud of in my career.
I can.
Third build additional dialogue director, which is not an official WGA credit, by the way.
Oh.
Additional dialogue is something, because animation is not WGA, they are allowed to bill an additional dialogue credit, which was very nice, actually, because usually when you do the kind of work that I do on a movie that's WGA, you get no credit. Because WGA does not have an additional dialogue credit. But it seems like in animation, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
What does WGA stand for?
Women's Guild of Athletics.
Thank you.
It's just like the WNBA, but slightly more effeminate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're into that here.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised to find out, talking to you before the show...
Let's tell the audience, we chatted a little bit before the show. We got into a little bit of a conversation, which we probably should have saved.
Yeah.
But I had to do something. You could not figure out how to hook any of this stuff up. And so I had to make chit-chat.
Yeah.
So full disclosure, we made a little chit-chat.
Yeah. And in full disclosure, a lot of that time you were on your iPhone.
Yes, I was. I was playing Words with Friends.
Yes. You also wrote the Puss in Boots, but... it's questionable
Shrek spinoff
whether they will ever see the light of day.
Well, I believe a Puss in Boots movie is being made.
You know how I know that?
How do you know
that? Because when we're at DreamWorks, we saw the official poster.
Oh, great. So, I'm sure it's coming out, but not the one that I wrote. But,
okay.
But yeah, I worked for DreamWorks for probably 3 years, I think, of which Shark Tale 2 took up the majority of that time, as I recall. I can explain.
Describe your process.
Like.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was it like day to day?
All right.
What was it like on the first day when you first walked in?
First day, I'm nervous. It's like the first day of school all over again.
Right,
I'm meeting
right.
this person. I'm meeting that person. Yeah. No, I BJ Porter and I, who also was on Mr. Show, that I've written many things with. He also does the Between Two Ferns with me.
Mm-hmm.
We went in to work on Shark Tale 2. Okay, before Shark Tale 1 ever came out.
They wrote Shark Tale 2 first?
When you say they, you're talking about me.
Yes. Well, I don't know because...
Wait,
you wrote
Shark Tale 2 before Shark Tale?
Yes. I realize that it's confusing, but if
Very
you let me get out more than one sentence, I will continue and explain.
So what do you think about switching gears?
All right. So anyway, flashing back even further.
Yes.
I'm a baby.
Yes.
I can feel nothing.
Yes, except your burning hands.
Yes. All right, no. So what happened? This is probably a year before Shark Tale comes out. We're brought in, and they say Shark Tale is going to be a big hit, and we want to get started on the sequel early, because that way these, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you guys in the animation.
I do.
These movies take a long time to make. They take about 3 years to make soup to nuts, sometimes four, I think. Sometimes five, maybe two, but three is about the average. So I think they brought us in a year early before it came out because they wanted a sequel to come out like only 2 years after the original, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So they didn't want to, you know, have a big hit on their hands and then they're not ready to follow up with the sequel. So we were brought in to, you know, take a look at all the, designs they had, all the three-dimensional characters they had. They had very few scenes actually animated. They had everything storyboarded, and they had a animatics and stuff like that. So we took a look at it all. I believe at that time we watched the movie in animatic form with temp voices or some real voices, you know, Will Smith, I think, and some temp voices. And we said, okay, yeah, it looks good. They really wow you there with all the artwork and stuff like that and go, wow, this is going to be an amazing world. And, you know, look at all the stars who are in it and all that kind of stuff. So we agreed to write the sequel, Shark Tale 2. Meanwhile, Shark Tale 1 is still going on, and there's still... what's interesting about that movie is it was not really written yet, and it's about a year away from coming out. So they have a version of it that they've like cobbled together from various different things. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, probably don't know that in animation, how it all begins is it begins with a half-assed idea that you then flesh out with storyboard people. And they kind of figure out the plot of your movie. I think like the head of the studio has an idea of like, what if it's fish being gangsters? And what if Will Smith is in it? And they go, yeah, that's cool. And then storyboard people like figure out your entire plot. And not one storyboard person, like about, 15 storyboard people. Yes.
Are you saying before?
Before a script is ever
written. It's even written.
Yeah, before it's written.
So this is like a inspirational visual comic book seeing of the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a very weird process because normally when you get a deal to write a movie, the writer comes in and they have an idea and they say, here's the idea for the movie to the studio, and the studio gives their notes or they buy the idea, they give their notes of like, well, what if this happened? You sort of plot it out beforehand. Then the writer writes it. And then you work on it a little more and revise and stuff like that. And then the actors film it. But in animation, or at least DreamWorks animation, maybe it's different at Pixar. I would imagine it's different at Pixar. Yeah, I would hope so. What they do is they have an idea for a movie. They come up with all the character designs. They paint a bunch of paintings that looks cool. And they go, they do a lot of research about, like, at least for Shark Tale, they did a lot of research about fish and shit like that. And they were like, oh, look, whales are cleaned by fish. That's how they stay clean. So we're going to, because it's like a gangster thing, and that's in the 70s, we're going to have an ode or a paean to car wash as the whale wash. So they build a huge environment for a whale wash. None of the script is written yet. And they build all these environments, and then storyboard people put together what they call it launching scenes. And they show it to a director and go, in this scene, this fish is like a gangster, and he's like, and the storyboard people basically plot out the movie. Meanwhile, a writer is taking all these storyboard, he's watching these storyboard things and incorporating it into a script, which at the point we came in, the script, I think, was not written yet. I'm not really sure. A lot of it was written, maybe 70 pages of it was written. So the reason I bring all this up is because we were brought in to write Shark Tale 2, and they very quickly realized that they needed help writing Shark Tale 1, which was not written yet. So, and you know what I found was very interesting is it does not take a long time to animate a scene, we found out. It takes like a week to animate a scene, computer-generated.
It takes a while to build all the models.
But all the models and everything are built already at that point. Right. Okay, so all the models are built, all the environments are made, everything is all there. But it doesn't really take all that long to animate a scene. So you could write scenes up to, 2 months before it came out, and they would like go bloop, 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 and that's me miming,
that's how
typing on a computer. No, those are the noises I make because I can only feel on my fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
And I scare people when I scream loudly. Mm-hmm. But you can just write a scene like right before it comes out, and they'll animate it and throw it into the movie, right?
Wow.
So a year before it came out, you would think that it would be, relatively close to being perfected, but the next 9 months or so, 10 months maybe even, were comprised of us trying to figure out the story to Shark Tale 1 and writing scenes for it and just trying to figure out how to make it work given the constraints we have. And those constraints would be, we have these environments, we have these characters, go ahead and try to write scenes with them.
Here's a question. You said that they hadn't finished Shark Tale 1 and you were working on Shark Tale 2.
Yes.
Because there's, at this point, things aren't fully formed, how did you know that what you were doing for Shark Tale 2 wasn't actually Shark Tale 1?
That is a great question. What we quickly found out is there is no way to write Shark Tale 2 without finishing Shark Tale 1.
Mm-hmm.
Without knowing where the characters end up, without knowing what story they are in. Because literally all they had were a bunch of scenes, a basic premise of that Will Smith plays a fish who kills a shark and becomes famous for it, and then the mob is after him. Okay, now how did they arrive at that premise? We find out later that they came up with this idea of sharks as gangsters, and then they figure out that Will Smith is the biggest movie star in the world, and they say, oh, let's put Will Smith into it, but not as a shark, and then they came up with an idea of him as a guy killing a shark. Now, cut to a year before the film comes out, they realize that killing a shark in the original title of the movie is Shark Slayer, is too violent for kids. So now we have to figure out a way to backpedal it and make him not kill any shark and make it not very violent and somehow make the story make sense, which would include the scenes that they actually already have animated that don't work anymore. We ended up throwing out scenes that were like some of the earliest ones they animated because they're too violent, they don't fit the story anymore. And you're always running up against people going, ah, but we already have that scene and it looks so good and we all love it. And you're like, but it doesn't fit the story. Like, there's no. So you end up like tossing a whole bunch of stuff. And basically, like, a lot of the movie was sort of thrown together right before it comes out.
You know what's surprising about hearing this happening at DreamWorks?
Is that Shark Tale is so good?
Oh, that goes beyond any description. But this sounds oddly enough like the artistic process that a lot of people go through, independent animators, when they're working on their films, animating something, see what it looks like. Maybe you're going to use it, maybe you don't. You let it grow organically. Very surprising that a studio with that type of budget behind it would do such things and not even have it finished, not even having it completely written a year before it comes out.
It's. Yeah. I mean, it was a really interesting process, and I've worked in a lot of different, I've worked in film, I've worked in television, and it's, you know, I mean, it's not the craziest thing in the world. I mean, in TV, sometimes you're behind the eight ball and you're trying to figure it out, and you're like, on a sitcom, you're like trying to, you're gauging the laughs, and you don't get the laughs all that well, so you rewrite a scene right there. So it's not the craziest thing in the world, but it wasn't. It certainly wasn't what I was used to, and it. It wasn't exactly beneficial to the end product, I think, because if you look at Shark Tale, even though it made a decent amount of money, I don't think anyone's going to say it's a classic of the genre. You know, it basically, what my job ended up being was trying to make something make sense that had a lot of disparate elements in it that shouldn't be together just simply because they were marketable. You know, Angelina Jolie is a big star, so let's make her be a sexy fish. How does that fit into the story? It ended up actually damaging it. But, you know, 2 years earlier, it was kind of a good idea of there will be a temptress fish and it'll be Angelina Jolie. And you show Angelina Jolie the exact same pictures that they showed me and go, it'll be great. It's going to be a big hit. We're DreamWorks. We made Shrek. And you get her hooked in to, not to use that pun, but... but literally you put a big fish hook into her mouth.
It's easy because she has those big lips.
And so once you've hired Angelina Jolie or once you've hired Will Smith, you can't say to them, hey, we're not hiring you. You're off the movie because you've already made a big announcement that they're in the movie. So you're kind of stuck with all this stuff that you end up having to use in the film. And actually we had to use a lot of those elements in Shark Tale 2 as well, because they're all locked into contracts for three movies. So it was very, very interesting and kind of backwards in my mind, but the end product speaks for itself.
Here's a question for you. Your opinion, having A-list live-action actors do voiceovers for animation, good idea or bad idea?
You know, I really think DreamWorks was on the forefront of casting... famous people and making, not only casting famous people, but making the characters look like those famous people. If you remember Shark Tale, like Will Smith's fish, Oscar, looks a lot like Will Smith, and they modeled him after Will Smith, and that's how they hooked him, is they made the design for him before he was ever in it and said, look, here's what you look like as a fish, and you know, it looks cool. And so they were sort of the first people to do that, as I mean, I'm not, you know, a historian of animation, certainly, although I'd love to be.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. I mean, it Disney sounds like a great job.
Disney did that on, like, Aladdin. They modeled the genie.
Did he look like Robin Williams? I don't know. He looked more like a cartoon to me. Like,
well,
they
would look at the facial expression.
Yeah, no, they've always done that of, like, incorporate facial expressions. But not like it's a caricature.
Right.
You know what I mean? So DreamWorks was sort of the first people to do that. Do I think it's a good idea? I think part of the problem, at least that I saw while I was there, is that Will Smith, especially without a script, you'll give Will Smith a general idea for a scene and suggestions of dialogue, and you'll say, here, can you just riff on this? And he'll be in the studio. He's gone down there for an hour, you know, to work on this one day every 6 months. And they'll say, can you riff on this? And Will Smith will, like, riff a bunch of lines and use his, you know, considerable acting ability to try to come up with something funny on the day. But Will Smith is not necessarily a writer or a joke smith necessarily, you know. His name isn't Joke Smith.
No, it's not. Just Smith.
So
it doesn't mean he's good at metal?
You know, I think a lot of actors, and I started out as an actor, would say that they would prefer to come in and have a strong script that you then can improv around and not be told, hey, man, we think this is happening. Can you just, like, riff, you know? Because that puts an actor in a really behind the eight ball position. So, but what I found is because it's Will Smith, the people behind the movie seem to think everything that he says is gold, when it's really an actor just trying to make something work. And so they keep everything in. So
hurts me.
In my opinion, so much. I watch that movie and I go, oh, there's so much stuff that I wish they would have cut out. Like, you know, like an actor, when you're acting, you want the editor to cut stuff out if it's not working, you know. But I think they were a little deferential and they kept a lot of takes in because they're, you know, they're really impressed with Will, and so they left it in. But so you know, I look at that movie and I kind of go, that's really crumbling under the weight of its star power a little bit, because that movie honestly has the biggest star power out of any of the DreamWorks movies, I think. I mean, look at it. It's like Will Smith, Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Jack Black, Renee Zellweger, Angelina Jolie. I mean, those are, like, you know, any two of them could be in an animated movie and that would be your cast, you know, but they're all in it and they're keeping everything that any of them say, you know.
Whereas Pixar, strong script, they get actors, good actors who are also,
yes,
have unique voices. And
I mean, look at Ratatouille, you know, my friend Patton, you know, he is not famous at all. And they just thought he was perfect for the part. Or The Incredibles, Craig T. Nelson. Yep. I mean, people love Coach, maybe too much.
Sarah Vowell.
She's got a really great voice. Yeah. And no one cares. No one goes. But I think DreamWorks is smart because they realized that would help people go to this movie. I mean, it really did.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that movie would have made $175 million domestic if Will Smith had not been in it. I think it really was like, hey, here's this movie, Will Smith's in it, let's take the kids, you know. So it's actually smart in there in one respect, but maybe artistically kind of hurt the film. I don't know.
Alan, you have a question.
I do, about sequel culture.
Sequel culture?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the speed at which sequels come out these days hurts the properties for which they make them?
Well, you know,
as far as the story and writing goes,
the most famous example I can think of is the fourth Batman movie, the second one that Schumacher made, Batman and Robin. Yeah. If you watch the DVD of that, they talk about how normally those movies take 3 years to make, and they came out 3 years apart. But they wanted to capitalize on how much Batman Forever made, and it sort of reinvigorated the franchise. So they said, it's going to come out 2 years from now. And they talk about, I think, on the commentary and in the documentaries on that DVD about how it killed the Batman franchise, mm-hmm, how they rushed to do it. And I'm not saying that, like, a good director would have accepted any of the ideas in that movie, but I think Joel Schumacher is kind of trying to say, hey, look, you know, we only had 2 years, and so I just had to approve a bunch of shit. And, you know, I mean, you know, that's, but I don't know how anyone in their right mind is, like, actually approving, you know, the Batman and Robin on, like, snowboard through the air sequences that happened in that movie.
It's extreme Batman.
That is true. Yeah, it was extreme, which is why I loved it. Yeah, why I loved it.
Yeah.
But so I think it does. I mean, you know, Shark Tale 2 ended up being a very different process for us. We, after watching how it worked with Shark Tale 1, we wrote it with one of the directors of the first Shark Tale, Rob Letterman, who's a great guy, and we worked really well together. Once he was done with Shark Tale 1, and once we were all done with Shark Tale 1, we said, you know what we'd really like to do with Shark Tale 2 is we'd love to write the script before we ever have a meeting about storyboarding and before you start people working. Because that's another thing we found is, like, when you work at DreamWorks, you're on salary, right? They have a lot of people on salary, and they need stuff for these people to do. So I would be there, and you'd have meetings scheduled all the time, and like, your assistant would come in and go, okay, so are you okay with a meeting with this storyboarder at this time and this storyboarder at this time? And I'd go, why am I in all these meetings? I don't want to be. Yeah, and that's what it is. They need people to be working to justify their salaries, so they have them, like, basically wasting time just, like, storyboarding sequences that'll never get in the movie. So we said, okay, we don't want to do that for Shark Tale 2. We just really want to write a strong script, and then we can start from there. And DreamWorks, from my knowledge, had never done that before, and let us do it, which was great. And it took a while, too, because we really had to figure out why all these characters would be together again. Because the Shark Tale 1 is such a crazy story that we were like, how do all these people get together again? You know, why do all these sharks and all these weird fish get together? And why is the whale wash in it?
Dance competition?
That's exactly what it was. Undersea dance competition.
Yeah.
But we actually came up with a great story, a great script. I'm super proud of it. And we turned it in. And as I remember, we turned it in maybe 2 months after Shark Tale 1 came out, and turned it in, and it was super tight and great, and they said that it was the best script they'd ever received, and in that meeting said, but we're not making it because Shark Tale needed to make $10 million more dollars to justify a sequel.
Wow.
Well.
And I agree. No one's clamoring for a Shark Tale sequel. So I think they made the right choice.
That was very smart of them.
Yeah, it really was. But yeah. I think it was just a funny process to me, being all that money going into a Shark Tale sequel that they will never recoup. But it was fascinating. It was really a fascinating glimpse into this kind of animation culture, which then I worked one more year on doing Puss in Boots, which I should not have done because that just... That was already so far down the road, and it wasn't like Shark Tale 2 at all, where they did not want to write a script before they started everyone working. And so that just became a disaster. Another year of like an animator coming in and having written your entire sequence before you write it, and you go, well, that sucks. I'm not using any of that stuff. And then they get insulted because they've worked so hard on it, and, you know, it just, that was, you know.
But isn't that, I mean, it's both adorable and adventurous. Wasn't that enough just to sink your teeth into it?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I try to remind myself of those qualities every day.
Yeah. Do you write them down?
Let's just sink our teeth into things because I'm adorable and adventurous.
Tattoo it on your arm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's another question.
By the way, you don't have to say here's another question before you ask things.
Yeah. No, that...
I'll know it from the way your voice goes up at the end.
that was a question, but I went down at the
Joel
end.
Joel has no inflection.
I said, here's another question. That's my question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
Favorite animated thing ever?
Wow. You know, I love the Toy Story movies to no end. Those are my absolute favorites. I actually... BJ and I tried to write Toy Story 3 at a certain point, which... I loved the first two, and this was at a time when Pixar was feuding with Disney, and Disney was going ahead and making the sequels without Pixar. So someone I knew from working on Shark Tale had gone over to Disney and called us in for a meeting, and I watched 1 and 2, and I just loved those so much, and I thought, you know, for 3... 2 is so emotional. I mean, 1 is carefree and fun and a little bit emotional, but 2 is so emotional that you really have to up the stakes of emotion in that. So what we pitched Disney was that Toy Story 3 would be the day that Andy gives his toys away. And we pitched out a really interesting story where, I mean, Toy Story 3 did it better, but where they actually go up to the attic and get trapped in the attic, and they have to, like, escape and all this kind of stuff. And the way we ended it was that he ends up giving the toys away to his cousin, and you find that toys can live on, you know, and have lives after their, you know, their original user. So we pitched that to Disney, and they looked at us like we were crazy. And they said, we would rather just do, like, a murder mystery. They had a murder mystery script where basically, really? Like, Woody and Buzz go to a cabin in the woods, and there's a bunch of new toys, and one of the toys is a murderer, and they end up getting murdered one by one. Huh. It was really gruesome.
My God.
That can be emotional, though.
And then it was basically they find out who the murderer is, and that was the end of the movie, and they were like, can you do something with this? And that is when I knew that Toy Story 3, if Pixar was not involved, would be doomed forever. And we just kind of went, that sounds cool. All right, see you later, and walked out. And then it was strangely emotional for me to go see Toy Story 3. And, you know, I'm certainly not saying that my mind is on par with anything that Pixar ever does. I'm so glad they got it. It just was really interesting to me to see scenes that I had thought of come alive on. I'm not saying they even stole the scenes. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just want to be clear.
They were on the same wavelength.
They were on the same page, and it was. And I was telling my wife, it was very emotional for me to see these scenes that I kind of envisioned my version of come to life and be done so beautifully. Mm. And it was just really a treat to see. Not that I thought of the movie or anything, but just to see a version that I wanted to see and one that I had wanted to be a part of, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, to see that up on the screen. It was really fantastic.
I was pretty impressed, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but I'm not going to go into detail. There's a moment when they are facing their own death.
Mm-hmm. Whoa, I haven't seen it yet.
Alan, but you love Toy Story so much.
Oh, I forgot. I'm not going to see it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was a pretty unique and risky thing to do in an animated film that the majority of the audience are going to be kids.
It was like when I read The Road, you know? It's like you're facing your own fucking mortality. Yeah. And I picked up The Road one day after hearing it was good, and my wife walked in after I'd watched The Words Go By on 20 pages. into my brain. And, but she walked in and my face was ashen, and she goes, "What's wrong?" And I said, "This is the heaviest book I've ever read in my life." But that's how I felt watching Toy Story 3 in that moment that you're talking about. Like, I cannot believe they're going to this extent and they're taking the audience to those emotions. And, it's really an achievement. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And Alan, you're missing out because you're a cynic. And you have no love in your heart, and you never will.
I think that's a fair statement. Yeah. Okay, I can live with that.
Disagree. I would love to see a mixed up combination of The Road and Toy Story.
Yeah, you know what I would love to see is I started thinking about this that in the world of WALL-E, that probably those toys are still alive and they're trapped under all the rubble.
Yeah.
And what happens if WALL-E digs them up?
Yeah. Yeah,
you have crossover.
But do toys live after humans have died?
Well, that is a really interesting question. Is if a tree falls in a forest and no one is around to hear, does anyone give a shit?
Especially if it's Woody.
Yeah.
Now, sure. Alan and I know you know this because you've listened to all of our podcasts.
Yes,
but,
of course.
We have written Toy Story 4.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's Andy working at an animation studio.
Oh, because he loves animation. He's trying to recapture his youth because he has stunted emotional growth.
Right.
Okay.
He's in a cubicle. Maybe he's doing graphic design for something. He sees all the other people around him with their cubicles, all their toys, Pez dispensers, whatever. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, fuck, where are my toys from when I was a kid?
I gave them away. Yeah.
I have to go kidnap that little girl.
But I think she dies.
Oh, good. By his hand?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's in the first 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like...
It's just a harrowing, just kind of like, he strangles her to death.
Yeah. It'll rival the first 5 minutes of Up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the murder mystery part of...
Yes, and it would pacify the Disney heads as well.
All right, good.
But then He gathers his toys, puts them in the cubicle. He has this brilliant idea, pitches it. They said, let's change everything, let's go with it. And they make Toy Story 1, Circle of Life.
Yeah. And then they fingerprint the toys and see the missing little girl's fingerprints.
Oh.
And traces of his semen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, of course.
And they shrug and say, that's weird. And then that's the end of the movie.
Like, Bo Peep, I found you.
Huh, that's weird. What's that all doing there? Oh, well, forget it. Great movie. Yeah.
And then that just sets it up for Toy Story 5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, unrelated.
Yes.
Aren't you glad I didn't say, here's another question? Podcasts.
Uh-huh.
Would you say that is this century's definitive art form?
Well, we're really early into this century, I have to say. But that said, yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
In fact, I would say that this podcast is the definitive art form of this century.
Thank you. I've been saying that. It's like an echo. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
How is this century's definitive art form, podcasts, similar and dissimilar to last centuries?
Well, last century, what would you say radio was for the first 3 decades, you know, or 4 decades even, you know. So what would you say is the definitive art form of last century? Film?
Chia Pet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Warner Brothers.
Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes Chia Pet.
Looney Tunes, okay. How is it dissimilar to that?
Yeah.
It's not a Chia Pet.
That's right.
So in that respect, it's very different.
It can grow on you, though. Yeah. Alan, what do you think?
That hurt me.
Yeah. Well, here's something very insightful. Uh-huh. I'm just going to talk over Alan. Alan, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's fine. No.
Alan's drinking another... Yeah. Another.
That's a different glass, isn't it?
That's more like a fishbowl of vodka. I do believe this, Scott Aukerman.
Yes,
Joel. I believe that...
Yes, Joel, whatever your last name is.
That's right. I believe that podcasts are... taking the radio days, bringing them back. But this time it's different because you can take it with you out into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to huddle around your living room with your family in a pipe.
Although we still do. I hold the iPod up and it hurts my arm after a while.
Yeah.
But you're taking it out into the world.
In this economy, you have this, to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you can program your own radio.
You can program your own. You can...
Yeah, some people might listen to mine, you know? Some people might listen to yours.
That's true. Some people will. Some people won't.
By the way, we should plug mine one more time.
Yeah.
Comedy Death Ray Radio. It's really the premier podcast of the premier art form of this generation.
Yeah.
You know, just hit 2 million downloads. Mm. How many did you say?
You get about 1,000 a week. I'm not sure what your program's about. I mean, ours is the Friends Reform and Animation Forum. It's very clear, you know, what we do in the title.
Because it's all about animation.
Like, is it about, like, baking?
It's definitely about baking. We have to put...
Death Ray?
Yeah, we have to put that into every podcast.
Yeah.
We have recipes at the end.
Do you have obituaries?
That's a big... Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
Because I know you're... You know, we usually swap the iPod.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to yours, and then you listen to mine.
Mm-hmm.
While you hold it up the entire time for both, which I've offered to hold it up during mine. But
I don't want to be strained.
But obituaries are a big part of it. We don't just like to do one town, although we will feature one town sometimes. Mm. Like, here's obituaries from Spokane for this program.
Right, or Cannes.
You know, Cannes, France.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of obituaries there. People are dying all over the place.
I know, every day.
It is crazy. They have a problem there.
If, you know, seeing death is one thing, reading about it, another.
That's true.
Yeah.
Staring death in the face, one thing, but just hearing about obituaries,
it's
far, far more disturbing. But yeah, we usually do that for about 45 minutes, sprinkled in throughout the whole thing.
Okay.
We'll do a recipe, we'll read an obituary, we'll read another obituary, we'll read another obituary. Most of it is obituaries.
Yeah.
Very few recipes. You know, we'll just like imagine what these people were like when they were alive and how much more fun they were probably having.
Right.
And that's really what the show is. And we talk about animation.
Do you?
Yeah. Pretty much every show. Every show we're talking about animation.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
You
have how many listeners?
Two million. Yeah.
Alan, why is he on? All right. Since you're here.
Since I'm here.
We'd like to play a little game with you.
Let's do it.
It's called Sound affects.
Mm-hmm.
Computer. Go ahead, music.
Alan, are you the computer?
Ooh. Very, very good. Okay, so how this goes. You've heard of sound effects.
Sure, I have.
Or FX.
I've heard of FX, the effects channel.
Right, right.
The cable network. It's good. Where everything is special effects and sound effects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I've heard of FX the movie, effects starring Michael Crawford, which was a Vegas show.
Mm-hmm.
So I've definitely heard of effects.
Yeah.
And sound effects. So I've heard of the Jam album sound effects. So I have a lot of experience in this field. Mm-hmm. So certainly that's what you're going to be talking about, is sound effects.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, you are wrong.
What?
No! I mean, we can talk about it if you want to, if you need to get something off your chest.
No, I think I've pretty much covered it.
Okay. We want to know how sounds make you feel.
Okay.
I'm going to give you some famous sound effects from animation history.
All right.
Tell us how it makes you feel. And then if you need to go further in emote, go ahead and try to reproduce that sound effect.
All right.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. From the Transformers cartoon, the sound of Megatron transforming into a tiny little pistol.
Can you...
And we'll grade you.
Can you give me an impression of that sound effect? Because I'm not quite picturing it. What does it sound like?
Alan, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sexy. Sexy.
That's what they were going for.
Uh-huh.
That whole, it's about masturbation.
Okay.
In reverse, because he's a giant robot, transforms down
into
a little tiny pistol.
Yeah.
Alan, is he right?
Absolutely. It's the sexiest sound effect I know of.
Thank you, computer.
How many points so
I mean,
far?
Alan.
Here's another one. On Super Friends, the sound of Aquaman telepathically summoning a sperm whale.
Ooh. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 Aquaman. No, no, no. You don't do that. You don't do that, Aquaman. No, 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 no. You don't do that.
You know what's brilliant about what you just did?
What's that?
The no, 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 no's, how you did it, sounded almost like how a dolphin speaks.
Yes, that's what I'm going.
Wow.
Thank you so much. It's fun. It's so good to talk to someone who gets it.
That
no offense,
brilliant.
Alan/computer.
That is brilliant. You're such a fan of our show.
Yes.
Okay, another one. From the Thundercats. Are you familiar?
The seminal cartoon from the 80s, the Thundercats, sure.
Yeah. Chitara giving Panthro a tongue bath.
Okay.
All right. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't remember that ever happening in Thundercats.
I don't know if it ever was shown, but they're cats.
Well, we can assume that they...
Yeah. That's how they clean themselves.
It's like, you don't see Jack Bauer going to the bathroom, but he has to at some point.
He did
in that
season 1.
Yeah. And I have a problem.
You saw him taking
that.
A nap, too, in season 1. Remember
like
that?
Eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boring. Okay, right, let's paint the picture. You're in the you're in the Thunder Tank.
Okay, great.
The doors are closed.
I usually am there. This must be Friday.
Friday night.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
You're there, and you're Chitara.
Mm-hmm. I'm Chitara?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm not just some passive observer?
No, we're putting you right in the hot
seat.
Okay,
boy.
All right, you're Chitara.
POV.
You have a skin-tight leotard on, though we don't know if that's actually clothing or just their skin. We don't know.
But I also do when I'm Chitara.
Yeah.
You were just talking about me
right
now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
You're there. You are lying back. Your arms akimbo, but lying down. Which is a weird...
That's a little strange.
Uncat-like way of laying.
I can go with it. Yeah. All right.
The door opens.
Boo.
There's Panthro.
Panthro?
Panthro has his spiky gladiator cross straps.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's looking a little dirty.
Sweaty.
Sweaty.
You're so
dirty.
He's licking his fangs.
Boo, boo, boo.
He comes on in, slides up.
Slidey?
Puts his hand on your Thundercat medallion, starts stroking, and says, I'm a dirty, dirty, dirty kitty.
I'm dirty, too. Wait, why would...
Your tongue...
Why, what are you doing?
...is very long.
My tongue? You see my tongue? this is my tongue. My tongue's not wet enough. What am I going to do?
Chitara sounds a lot like the sperm whale.
What am I going to do? My tongue's not wet enough. What? What, you have an idea?
I'm dirty.
You have an idea of how to make my tongue wet?
If you ruffle it through my fur, it'll dry that baby out, baby. But don't forget your cat. And then the moment is ruined. There we go. But they don't care because they're cats.
They don't care. They don't care about moments.
No. They care about fighting.
You know, it's not Thundercats. It's not the destination. It's the journey.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah. Well, I'm so glad I got into character for that.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
That was you're far under. That was like Inception.
You know, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You've done this before.
I'm an actor. Look, that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, you got to dive right in. You got to say yes, and you got to just go with whatever, wherever it leads you. You know what I mean?
Don't
say
no.
All about instincts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One final one. Here you go.
Okay.
All right. Alan, you ready? Oh, first of all, is he right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been dead on.
What's the score so far?
Yeah. What is my score? Is everything worth one or are certain ones worth more?
They're worth pictures.
Oh, I see.
What does he have so far?
The score right now is cum stained underwear.
Okay, great.
Very good. That's pretty good for the
first
time.
Not bad at all.
All right, last one. On the show, Everybody Loves Raymond, the sound of Ray calling to his wife in another room. What is he mad about? Let's say he erased their wedding video. How's he tell her?
Deborah. I'm trapped, Deborah. Earthquake. Oh, bookcase on me. Deborah, I'm dead.
Alan, is that correct?
I'm afraid for mention of Everybody Loves Raymond, that's minus 1,000 points.
Oh,
wow.
How do you take 1,000 points out of cum-stained underwear?
It's cum-stained sock now.
Okay,
well.
I'm so sorry, but that's the final question. You're
gonna
have to leave.
Oh, no, I didn't win.
Well, you win.
I win the cum-stained sock?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Yeah. Although Alan has it back in New York. Yeah.
You guys think of everything.
Yeah. And finally, any questions for us?
You guys are doing a great job. I want to, less of a compliment and more of a question. Just, you guys are great.
..
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You heard my voice. Rhetorical. That's how you do it, Joel.
Oh.
Yeah, you lift it up.
Lift
it up at the very end.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and if you start too high at the beginning, you'll never get up there. You know what I mean?
Oh, you can't reverse
you
it?
You guys are great! Yeah, okay. You can't do that.
If you start high and go down low, is that a statement? Always?
Yeah, let's try it out. You guys are great!
It just sounds sarcastic.
More sarcasm. Yeah. You want to keep an even keel if you're just saying something. Okay. You guys are great. That's the computer.
Like
that's Alan talking.
Yeah. Where can people go to find more about you?
Just look at our website, google.com.
Okay. Is that United States? So it's not like CA?
Google.co/UK.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to read or hear more of my stories about Shark Tale,
I'm sure there's much more.
I read the audiobook of Shark Tale. They got me to do it because Will Smith and Robert De Niro were not. They were neither available nor interested.
How is that? Because that's just a picture book. So how does it work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I describe the pictures in minute detail. I am great at looking at something and just being able to talk and describe every little bit of detail about it. Like, for instance, you're like a man.
Yeah.
This is kind of tough. You're kind of tough, but you're like a person and a man, a person, man, person who's you're a sit stander who is a man person and you're word talking. You're word talking. I could I can do this for hours, but that's a lot of what the Shark Tale book is about. So, you know, it's 26 CDs of 3 minutes per CD. And yeah, so it's 82 minutes, 72 minutes, maybe I should have said.
You can download those CDs?
No, they are not for purchase.
Oh.
At all. No, never.
Well, Scott Aukerman, thank you so much for being on our show. Computer, let's take him away. Thank you.
Hey! Yeah. What are you...
That's really nice. Okay. Wow. So, Alan.
Yeah.
Puss in Boots, opening night. Are you there with me?
I'll be there with boots on.
We should let people know.
I'll bring my cat, too.
Oh. Yeah. Right, your new kitty cat.
She looks like she's wearing boots.
She has the most adorable, what would you call it? Thigh-high.
It looks like she's wearing white stockings, on her hind legs. She's very cute.
Pretty adorable.
Yeah.
Alan, I am a little nervous about next week.
Why? What happens next week?
First, I start working for you. Little project.
That's right. I'm going to be your boss.
That frightens me when you say it like that.
Yeah.
I
think you should be frightened, Joel.
Okay.
I think you should be frightened because I'm going to work your ass off.
Okay. Please do.
Yeah.
Second thing.
Yeah.
First day of fall.
First day next of week. Fall. That's
very
right.
Excited.
Yeah.
What I do every spring is I collect all the fresh new leaves. And I sew them into different garments for the summer. They last throughout the summer. During fall, the leaves start to fade, start to crumble.
Wouldn't they, since you picked them off of a tree, wouldn't they die sooner than fall?
I hook all of the stems to a small rubber tube.
Okay.
And I have a hydroponic pack.
All right, that makes sense.
Where it's a fanny pack, I put it. On my,
I like that. That's good.
On my front.
It's a fronty pack.
It's a fronty pack.
Yeah.
Hydroponic fronty pack. Yeah. I then unplug it when fall comes so that they do actually decay.
Right.
And so the colors are amazing, especially in New England. And then I have a little ceremony where I molt it off and I'm born anew for the winter.
So you're just naked all winter long?
It's very cold.
Yeah, I bet.
We'll see you next time.
Not wet enough. What am I gonna do?
Chitara sounds a lot like the sperm whale.